Welcome to the Beating Heartland, created by Denver Bauman. Episode 2, The First Date. Welcome back, faithful listeners, to MWR's Heartland Supernatural. Today, we have an incredibly special episode for you. Why's that, you ask? Because it is the season of love. That's right, it's Valentine's Day. That special day of the year when you get to dote on the one you love. Today, we will be discussing terrifying tales of romance. No. We're not discussing that horrible first encounter with your partner's parents. We're not even discussing that dinner you had planned that went up in smoke. Today, listeners, we want bone-tingling, scare-inducing stories about your special romantic moments. And oh boy, do we have some good ones. We will be back after these messages. Thank you for spending part of your romantic day with us.
I never had luck with romance. I had a girlfriend for a couple of months, but that was it. They all end up getting tired of me. Tired of my aura of anxiety. Or they think I'm a weirdo, which I am. I mean, kind of why I host the radio show. It's like a pressure release valve, I guess. At least I'm not the only weirdo out there talking about ghosts and monsters all the time. Don't get me wrong, I believe less than half the stories we get on that show. Most of them pure garbage. A few, though, seem kind of legit. You know, I haven't looked into them, but... I could, I guess. Wouldn't hurt. I wouldn't even know where to start, though. Sorry, I trail off a lot. You're probably used to that. Anyway, besides you, I've barely interacted with anyone outside of work in the last 6 months. And you're paid to listen to me. My first date. That was something. Bad something. I mean... bad. It's kind of hard to talk about. I don't think you'll believe me, but here we go. I think I was 12 at the time. Something like that. I remember she was a girl in my literature class. I was a total nerd at the time. Well, still am, but... yeah. Always had to try and answer the most questions. Always brought in my 3DS to school, looking to trade Pokemon with whoever would talk to me, passionately talking about whatever TV show or book I was obsessed with at the time. A little insufferable. She seemed to like it. At least, she didn't look away quickly with disgust whenever she saw me. Her name was Sally. Sally Winters. She was new to the school, and a lot of the boys were... interested. For the most part, she kept to herself. She made polite comments if anyone asked her a question, but otherwise, nothing. No one really knew anything about her, and for young kids, that made her even more interesting. Kids love a mystery, especially if the mystery is beautiful. One day after school, she walked up to me. I was on my way home, and she asked if I wanted to hang out for a bit. She was blunt. No preamble, just confident, short, and direct. I was the opposite. After stumbling over my words for an eternity, I said a little, "Yes." She pointed towards the swing. I hopped into action, offering to push her on it. She accepted. We talked. My mouth was dry. She asked about my mom, my hobbies, what I wanted to do with my life, that sort of stuff. I probably asked her something, but can't remember them or her answers. She was mature for her age. Not physically, I mean, she talked. well, older somehow. She asked me about my greatest fear, which I answered. At the time, it was the ocean. I hated deep water. More specifically, I hated the unknown that was under the water. The knowledge that there was something below me I couldn't see. Before I knew it, we had made a date to see each other that weekend. The plans were made, the meeting location selected, and then she just walked away, just leaving me standing there, confused how I'd even pulled that off. Mom was excited when I told her the news. She started giving me a bunch of tips on how to talk to girls and ideas for dates. This went on for a while. That night, my eyes were glued open as my brain just rushed with possibilities. I was about to go on a date with one of the most sought-after girls in school. I started imagining our future, what my friends would say, meeting the parents, all that stupid stuff our brains rush with when we're jolted with infatuation. Saturday could not come soon enough, and unfortunately, it did. We had decided to meet outside the church. I was going to pick her up at her house, but she said she didn't want me to meet her parents. I said it would be okay, but she insisted. I assumed they didn't have a great relationship. Also, she said her house was a mess. I just agreed to meet her at the church. It was the small white building on the outskirts of town. You couldn't miss it. If we were ever lost, we just had to look to the steeple to find our way back. We would always go out into the country and get into all sorts of, well, danger. There were cornfields, forests, creeks. But most importantly, there were no parents. We met at the back of the church, where there's this creepy wooden door that led to the church's cellar. It's always locked, and there's stories of kids breaking into it, seeing all sorts of things. Troves of money, evil ceremonies, or just a bunch of food. It was all fake, besides the food, maybe. But kids love coming up with theories. The graveyard was back there, too. I could have recited all the names and dates by heart. I was back there so much as a kid. There she was, looking at one of the headstones. She was standing so still, barely breathing. To my 12-year-old brain, she was the most gorgeous person I had ever seen. Long red hair, freckles, blue dress that ruffled in the wind. My mouth was open when she turned to look at me. I closed it quickly, hoping she hadn't noticed. She chuckled and showed a picnic basket and blanket she brought. I realized we hadn't planned what we would be doing, but she decided we were going to have a picnic. She reached out her hand, and I nervously held it. My hands immediately started sweating, and I was cursing myself quietly. But she didn't seem to notice or care. We started walking away from the church toward a small clump of trees on the outskirts. I remember looking back and noticing that the pastor was looking at us in the window of his study. He just smiled at me, gave me a little nod. I wonder what he thought whenever he saw the kids running off out of town. And he probably would just watch to make sure we made it back safely, or call our parents if it was getting late. Before long, we were in the safety of the canopy of trees. Birds were chirping, light was spilling through the leaves, and a beautiful girl was beside me. She laid out a blanket and took out the food. We ate, talked, held hands. It was nice, innocent. I started to grow more courageous and was finally able to relax. Occasionally, she came across as kind of distant. She was incredibly sweet and attentive, but seemed not to understand some of the things I was talking about. She would nod and listen, but there was a barrier. I mean, I was probably talking about a bunch of nerdy stuff, but even the simple things, I would just catch this look on her face like it just didn't register. At least she was listening to me. And at the time, that was good enough for me. It was funny. She seemed more interested in me, asking me questions and wanting to know everything. After food, I walked her to a creek in the clearing. One of the reasons we went there so much as kids. Sally and I put our feet in the water, tossed some stones in, had a wonderful time. And then the sun started to set, and everything went wrong. Time can't be up yet. Come on, I haven't even finished the story.
And I saw the blood. Thank you, Michael, for that terrifying story. Up next, we have another story about love that just didn't last. Sometimes the people we want the most just disappear from our lives without a trace. This next story comes from listener Sally Winters. She writes, "I used to like this boy. This would have been around age 12. He was nerdy, always answered the teacher's questions, and could talk forever about Pokemon or Lord of the Rings. Perfectly my type. One day, I finally had the courage to talk to him, and we went on a date. I was so lucky that he said yes. We went to the forest clearing outside of town, just beyond the small church building. We had a picnic and enjoyed the creek. It was
sorry guys, I just Felix, yeah, cut the mistake. Yeah, I'm fine, just caught off guard. yes, I'm good to keep going. sorry.
We went to the forest clearing outside of town, just beyond the small church building. We had a picnic and enjoyed the creek. It was lovely. He was nervous, too. It was cute. He started to get some courage while our feet dangled in the creek. He looked at me, a silly little smile on his face, asked me a couple questions. I think I said something cute or silly, but then his face got all serious. His eyes widened like he had just seen something scary. I asked him what the matter was, but he didn't answer. He just stood up, shaking. I stepped towards him, begging to know what was wrong. He looked so scared, so pale, so cute. He started screaming. He was looking right at me, eyes wide, backing away from me as fast as his shaking hands allowed. He tripped, fell into the creek, started splashing around. His head wasn't coming above the water, like somebody was restraining him. I started screaming. I didn't know what to do. I ran away. For some reason, everything went black, and I woke up in my room. My family moved soon after, and I never saw him again. I really, really want to see him again. Thank you for your time, Heartland Supernatural. I needed to tell somebody, especially you. I'm sure you understand. Thank you, Sally, for your statement. Truly spine-tingling. It's time for a break. Stay tuned, listeners.
Yes, we'll take it again. Just give me a second, okay? Please.
Huh. Why these recordings? I mean, they don't really have anything to do with my dad or mom or, you know, any of that. I mean, I don't think they do. Is there something I missed? Or maybe you just want the full story of me, which, yeah, I completely understand. And no, that's not how the story went, obviously. I still don't know how she sent me that statement. I still think she doesn't even exist. Not really. I'm getting ahead of myself. I never had a chance to finish the story to my therapist. Well, more accurately, I never had the courage to. That recording was an early session with her. I was just working up the guts to talk about, you know, all of this stuff. I feel sorry for Ariadne. She's put up with a lot from me. Anyway, the actual ending. When we were relaxing with our feet in the creek, things started to get weird. She started asking stranger questions like, "What do you think death is like? Are you scared to die? Why? Do you know what drowning feels like?" You know, really creepy stuff. I answered, you know, still oblivious. The questions just kept coming, you know, just, "Is that why you fear the ocean? Drowning?" Looking back, I should have left, but I was young and stupid. And strangely comfortable. My answers were stupid little things, and she got upset. Said I had to be more invested in the conversation, and scooched closer to me. I could smell her dress. Old. Musty. I mumbled some kind of apology, and she stared at me. This thousand-yard, old stare. Finally, she gave her cute little smile and said, "Okay, I forgive you." And things seemed to get better. She was back to her kind, almost blank-slate self. It got dark quickly, and everything was too quiet. People like to think of the Midwest as quiet, but it's not. Not really. There's always the constant buzz of frogs, birds, corn, or trees in the wind. But at that moment, there wasn't anything. Not even the creek. Just her and me. She looked at me. Her eyes looked black in the dark. She grinned. This time, it wasn't the cute smile. It was wide, toothy, painful. There were too many teeth. Like a kid drawing someone's face that you see on the walls at school, where every single tooth is separated and defined. She said, with a voice almost blank of emotion,
"I've enjoyed our time together. One last question. Are you happy? Are you afraid?"
Her smile got even wider, and her mouth split open. It just kept stretching and stretching. I didn't think her mouth would stop. The gaping hole started to cover her entire face. And then it collapsed. From the center, all that was left was some impossible, fleshy hole where her face was. I started to scream. I stood, trying to run away, but my body felt all mushy. She slowly stood, arms and legs cracking like bones grinding against each other like they didn't fit properly. Her hands reached towards me, arms stretching longer than should have been possible. I tripped. Water rushed around me as I plunged into the shallow creek. I looked up, and there she was, the fleshy hole inches from my face. I struggled to get out of the water, but her hands were pinning me down. I was dying. Drowning burns, by the way. It's not peaceful like some people say. Your whole body is shutting down. All that's left is 1,000 needles stabbing through you. You try to scream for help, but more water rushes in. You forget what it feels like to breathe. Nothing makes sense anymore. The last thing I was going to see was that fleshy, gaping hole laughing at me. And everything went dark. I stopped thrashing, and the quiet was all I knew. I felt a hand grab my shoulder. Suddenly, I was coughing up water beside the creek. My eyes were hazy, but a fuzzy blob was standing in front of me. Thankfully, there was a face, not a hole. He said something that I didn't understand, and I spluttered out a, "Thank you." He patted my back, and suddenly everything was okay. My vision cleared. I could hear again. I took several deep breaths and looked at the stranger kneeling in front of me. He wore a wide brim hat and had like a long coat on, even though it was spring. His face was just like long, gaunt. It looked even more so with this pointy gray beard he had. He smiled at me with perfect white teeth.
You all right? It's not your time to die yet.
I told him I was okay. Thanked him again for helping me. I stood up, ready to go home. And the man was gone. I looked around, but he was nowhere. It was just me, alone in the woods. No fleshy, whole creature. No man with a hat. I went home. On the way, I passed the church. The pastor was still working in his office and looked at me as I passed. Smiled, waved. I probably looked shaken because he tilted his head, confused. Mom asked me all sorts of questions when I got home. How was it? What did you say? Do you have another date planned? She wasn't satisfied with any of my answers, but thankfully noticed I was tired and a bit shaken. She was concerned, but sent me to bed anyway, deciding not to interrogate me anymore. Okay, finally, done recording. Felix, yep, can you figure out who sent in the last story? Yeah, I'm aware that it says Sally Winters. Can we learn anything more about her? Yeah, I'm aware. Can we just try? Please. Thank you. Okay, that's a wrap, everyone. Nope, we're not doing that again. Okay, good night. Yeah, we never found any information on Sally. To public records, she didn't exist. I had Felix check in pretty much every data bank we had. Felix joined the company as an intern, around the same time I got the Sally statement. Good kid. I say kid. He's like 3 years younger than me, but, you know, different experiences. He couldn't find anything. Not even in the school records. I asked one of my old teachers about her, but she just gave me the "so many students to keep track of" excuse, you know. Her parents didn't exist either. There never was a Winters family living in Shannon, Illinois. I don't know who sent the story into MWR, but it wasn't Sally. I really hope it wasn't Sally. I never saw her again after that day. She just disappeared from school. No one talked about her. I asked my friend Sam if he knew anything, but he just looked at me like I was crazy. I dropped it. I did go to their address, though. You know, I had to be sure. It was abandoned. There was a layer of dust on everything. Windows broken. A moldy smell, you know. The only sign of life were words written on the back wall in smeared black ink. You can't trust anybody, Denver. You know what? I'm happy she's gone, okay? I don't know what I would have done if I'd seen her again. The years passed, the memories faded. I half convinced myself it was some hallucination from almost drowning, until I got the statement on the show. No one else knows about her. The only person there that day was the guy wearing a hat. You know, I've seen him around a couple of times. It's weird. I have like half memories of him like showing up from time to time. I have no idea who he was. Anyway, he was the least of my concerns at the time. I know none of this information is relevant to what happened to me in my mother's basement, or my dad, or, you know, any of that, but it feels important. You know, maybe it's connected, maybe it's not, I don't know, but, I mean, you guys obviously heard something in that recording you wanted to know, otherwise we wouldn't be discussing this. Can I know? Please? I could help. We're talking about me, after all. Actually, I am remembering something. It's fuzzy, but I mentioned my friend Sam. Do you have the therapy tape from when I talked about the cornfield? Never mind, that doesn't help. I live in the Midwest. There's one where Sam and I dug something up. Do you have that? Okay, well, if you find it, play that one, okay? There's something there that reminds me of the dad situation, but I need the recording to jog the memory a bit. I just need a drink. Do you guys have anything other than water?
The Beating Heartland was written and performed by Denver Bauman. If you enjoyed the show, please rate and review us on whatever streaming platform you are using. Follow us online at The Beating Heartland. Thank you for listening.